Manchmal willst du einfach nur ans Meer. Oder durch die Straßen einer lebendigen Stadt schlendern. Oder endlich den Moment genießen. Einfach die Welt mit TUI neu erleben. Mit TUI reist du so, wie du willst. Als Familie, zu zweit oder einfach allein. Flexibel, sicher und immer mit dem guten Gefühl, dass jemand da ist, wenn es drauf ankommt. Gestalte mit TUI Urlaub ganz nach deinen Wünschen. Überall im Reisebüro, auf tui.com und in der App.
Ein neuer Tag auf der Liebesinsel. Es wird gezwitschert, geflirtet.
Bist du einfach reich?
Bin reich mit Liebe.
Gestritten.
Viel Spaß mit der Hexe hier im Haus.
Und gefeiert.
Die Party kann losgehen.
The Violent VIP ist back. Endlich. Heute, 20.15 Uhr bei RTL 2. Und auf RTL Plus streamen.
Du willst im Herbst nicht auf deine Sommerdrinks verzichten und gleichzeitig etwas für ein starkes Immunsystem tun? Dann probiere jetzt unser Whey-Protein-Konzentrat aus 100% Biomilch mit 80% Eiweißgehalt. Cremig, gut löslich, ohne künstliche Zusätze. Erhältlich in verschiedenen Sorten wie Vanille oder Iced Latte und jetzt neu auch mit Matcha-Geschmack. Ein leckerer Drink mit hochwertigen Proteinen und ohne Zucker. Sichere dir jetzt schon 15% vor unserem Black-Sale-Start mit dem Code HEALTH15 auf edobilly.de. Viel Spaß bei deinem Podcast.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck Knicks? How's it going? So much is happening all the time. Not necessarily right in my immediate environment, but everywhere else, there are things happening. Daniel Stern is on the show today. Now, Daniel Stern, I don't know what age you are or who you are, but you know him from, obviously everyone knows him from Home Alone, The Wonder Years, City Slickers. But for me, because of my age, I think, it was Diner and Breaking Away. Diner was a very important movie to me. I can't even fully explain why. Maybe it was the year it came out. Maybe it was just it resonated with me. But Diner just fucking blew my mind. I can't even explain it. Maybe it was the camaraderie of the guys, the humor, the acting. I mean, it was early Mickey Rourke. Paul Reiser was like a kid. Kevin Bacon. Gutenberg. Ellen Barkin. But it was Levinson's film. But it really had an impact on me. And I'll talk about that a bit in a second. I think what's more important to address is I got to go to Vancouver today for the first little chunk. I'm going to go back and forth quite a bit for this acting job. And last night, or Saturday night, massive panic attack. I can't even remember the last time I had the panic, kind of overflow like that. I mean, look, there's always a little bit of panic, but I live with it and I've adjusted to it. And it's just part of the frequency I exist on, I think. Maybe I don't give myself enough credit. I don't know. But I do know when I can't sleep. And I do know when my brain fucking just goes. I mean, it was just full. What it was on fire. It was like one of these things where, okay, I'm trying to sleep. Fine. Cats are being a little crazy. Fine. Kit's over. But, you know, I just couldn't. It was almost like cocaine sleep. My heart was pounding. You know, I was driving her crazy. She went and slept in the other room. I had to lock the cats out. And I was just like tossing and turning, like that kind of thing where you're kind of trying to, you know, level off your heart rate. You're trying to find some sort of portal to sleep. You know, it's weird when you can't sleep. And usually I've noticed that when you are falling asleep, your brain kind of picks a thing that it kind of goes off on, like something that's outside of you, you know, kind of, I don't know, you start with thinking about something and then all of a sudden, you know, it becomes a dream zone and you're sleeping. The next thing you know, couldn't fucking lock on to anything. Anything I was trying to lock on to distract myself, of doing a serenity prayer over and over again, which is something I learned many years ago, just kind of a counting sheep business. I did some sort of positive affirmation business, but man, it was like Altered States, the movie, my bed became this isolation tank. And I was in this meditative zone, but it wasn't really. It was that zone where you're not sleeping, but your brain's not doing anything. So you're just kind of like moving through some murky kind of a galactic world of shapes and colors. And you're kind of like, you know, making, anyway, I do. I'm just sort of like, is that a face? What is that? Is that like, you know, where am I? But there's movement, but you're so, it's so self-conscious that there's no way you're going to get to sleep in that. You're just trying to fool your brain that you're asleep. And then it just started to go, man. And then all the stuff started to come up. It was like altered states, but I didn't make it all the way back to monkey. I didn't make it all the way back to primal man. I made it back to like maybe an 8-year-old me. And just the amount of discomfort and awkwardness that I felt all the way until that night. It was just like, it was like not a Rolodex. It was like a montage of embarrassing, traumatic moments, you know, of me trying to kind of put together enough armor to get through the fucking world. And then at the end of it, you know, after I go through all of these fucking memories, then I'm just sort of like this raw blob of self. And I'm kind of like, I can't do anything. I'm just, it's all a fake. I'm really like, I don't think I'm older than 10. I'm scared to go. I'm scared I'm going to suck. I'm scared I don't know how to do this anymore. I don't think I ever knew how to do it, this acting business or anything. And I just stripped it all down. And then I kind of ran around, not as primal man, not violent, just as a panicky, scared, on the verge of tears, like 8-year-old. Not great to be back there. Not something I wanted to revisit, but that's where I went. And then somehow or another, like I knew, like I've been through this stuff before. I've been through this stuff on drugs, you know, where you can't sleep. I've been through it like just naturally, too much caffeine or whatever. But this was really just pure panic and fear of the work, of the responsibility, of what I had to do. Am I good enough? Am I a fraud? Do I really know how to do this? Do I know this character enough? Is it going to be okay? It's going to be like, oh my God. Just, on the edge of tears. 8-year-old Mark sitting in his room in his grown-ass man body, mad at his cats, mad he can't sleep, but also just tweaked the fuck out. Full on. My breathing didn't get bad. Like I didn't hyperventilate or anything. And I was able to maintain and lower my heart rate. According to my Whoop app, which I no longer have any faith in, I got a good night's sleep. Yeah, that it's over for me in the Whoop app. Because it was not a good night's sleep. Maybe I got into some meditative state. But I finally found some sort of narrative that got me into sleep. And I'm trying to remember what it was. And I really think it was like filling up wheelbarrows and buckets with dirt and then just emptying them. That I don't know where that came from or why, but none of the other narratives were working. There was no thing I could think about that wasn't going to cause me more panic. What an ordeal. One night. I'm in Vancouver on Friday, June 21st at the Vogue Theater. Then I'm in Seattle on Saturday, June 22nd at the Moore Theater. In the fall, I'm coming to Tucson, Phoenix, Oklahoma City, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, Boulder, Colorado, Joliet, Illinois, Skokie, Illinois, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Sacramento, Napa, California. This is all assuming that, you know, the country will be intact. Look, if I cancel because of, state borders or Civil War type skirmishes, if I cancel again, I think we'll all understand. To get all my dates, including the ones from the summer that I need to reschedule, go to WTFpod.com/tour. Daniel Stern is here. Now, it's a weird thing when you build a relationship with an actor because, you know, Home Alone was a little, I was a little old for it. But because of Diner and because of Breaking Away, you know, those guys who are in both of those movies, you know, they're kind of wired into me, man. I mean, they're definitely wired into my emotional being. It was 1982 that came out. I don't know what date it would have been in 1982. I don't know. So I was just at a high school, my freshman year of college. But it just kind of blew my mind. And that was, you know, after seeing Paul Reiser in that, I thought he was the funniest guy in the world, which is kind of wild. And that's when I went, when it was just before that, I'd seen Paul Reiser in Diner. And I went to the comic strip from college, you know, to go see some comedy. And he was just sitting there by himself. That was that moment where I was like, oh, man, I love Diner. I'm going to talk to him. I said, I want to do comedy. And he's like, and I said, how do I do it? He's like, I don't know. You just got to do it. So, yeah, I don't know if I would have said that to a young comic, but you can't say much else. But, and I can't say that, like, well, that's the thing that turned me. Thanks to Paul Reiser's words of wisdom, I am now a comedian. But I do remember being thoroughly impressed with his timing and his humor in that movie. And I, so when Daniel Stern became, you know, an opportunity to talk to, I was like, of course. And now he's like this guy, you know, he's like this, you know, he's like, he's not that old, but he's had quite a life and he's been in a lot of things. He is 66 years old. Only 6 years older than me? That's crazy. That is the other thing that's, you know, at the core of a lot of this sort of anxiety is like this acknowledgement and realization that like all of a sudden I'm older than everybody. I mean, that's what happens at 60. Because I think, you know, between like 40 and 60, you're all kind of in the same world, the same community, like comics and everybody you know. And then it's like when you hit 60 and all of a sudden you're seeing people's age, you're like, what? How are you that much younger than me? Or what? You're only 6 years older than me? It's fucking crazy. I remember seeing you when I was a kid, but I really wasn't. Time's getting weird, man. That's all. But I'm all right. I hope you're all right. Are you all right? Is everything good? A lot of good conversations coming up. We've got a lot of good talks in the can. And this one with Daniel was really kind of beautiful. It was great. Because there's certain personalities, and I find this all the way through doing this show, that some of the assumptions I make about people based on their work are not wrong. And when you feel like you know somebody, you probably know a bit of them if they're out there in public doing things. You probably know enough of them to connect with them. And that usually turns out to be true. It's a rare thing where someone comes up here and I'm like, I kind of know this guy from the thing. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy is completely different than I thought. He was not, but he was a lot more. Good guy, reflective, has had kind of a great life, which is nice. It's nice. Enjoy this. His book, Home and Alone, comes out tomorrow, May 21st. You can get it wherever you get books. Great guy.
Manchmal willst du einfach nur ans Meer. Oder durch die Straßen einer lebendigen Stadt schlendern. Oder endlich den Moment genießen. Einfach die Welt mit TUI neu erleben. Mit TUI reist du so, wie du willst. Als Familie, zu zweit oder einfach allein. Flexibel, sicher und immer mit dem guten Gefühl, dass jemand da ist, wenn es drauf ankommt. Gestalte mit TUI Urlaub ganz nach deinen Wünschen. Überall im Reisebüro, auf tui.com und in der App.
Du willst im Herbst nicht auf deine Sommerdrinks verzichten und gleichzeitig etwas für ein starkes Immunsystem tun? Dann probiere jetzt unser Whey-Protein-Konzentrat aus 100% Biomilch mit 80% Eiweißgehalt. Cremig, gut löslich, ohne künstliche Zusätze. Erhältlich in verschiedenen Sorten wie Vanille oder Eiced Latte und jetzt neu auch mit Matcha-Geschmack. Ein leckerer Drink mit hochwertigen Proteinen und ohne Zucker. Sichere dir jetzt schon 15% vor unserem Black-Sale-Start mit dem Code HEALTH15 auf edubili.de. Viel Spaß bei deinem Podcast.
Pull that in. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I've never done a podcast.
You've done radio though, haven't you?
Yeah, a long time ago. You know, I don't do anything.
Yeah.
I don't.
But you look well.
Well, thank you. So do you. You must be like
what?
Traveling all the fucking. Do you go?
I did.
Out and
yeah, I just got back. Yeah, I you know, when I'm touring, I do travel and this and as I get older, it's you know, it's something I tend to, I don't know if I complain about it, but I'm surprised that, you know, like I just did Madison, Milwaukee, Chicago, and Minneapolis in a row.
Oy.
Yeah, Oy is right. But, you know, I don't know, man. I think like, well, it's just I'm not really doing that much during the day. How tired could you get? But you get tired.
Yeah, and the travel and that's why I don't do anything anymore just because I.
How long have you not done anything, Daniel?
Are we on?
Sure.
Okay. How long have I not done anything? I've tried to do nothing for about 25 years, 20 years. I hit a point where I I realized I'd made enough money that I could not hustle.
Right.
And made myself kind of stop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's sort of my dream. And I think I'm there, but I mean, I don't have a family.
Right.
And, you know, and
but you got all your music here. I mean,
I got music, I got cats, I got friends and stuff. But there does, you know, if you're brought up, I think, with a certain mindset where you're like, aren't we working towards stopping? Right.
Right.
But then, like, what is stopping me? Like, because I'm self-employed.
Right.
I mean, you did a lot of acting, and that's different because, you know, you're in a trailer half the day, you know, and you're doing that whole thing. But me, you know, I do stand up, I do this, and when you're self-employed, it all feels like nothing.
Right. Exactly.
But acting's a little different because
acting, you know, that's the thing. I was wasting so much freaking time on it.
Oh, I can't imagine. Just trailer time alone. You get, you
trailer
know.
Trailer and hotel.
Right. And it's like you don't, it's not that you, you could be changing the world necessarily, but you could certainly be doing something else.
Yeah. Yeah, and
right.
I had little kids, you know, at the time, and like,
then I'm
like on the phone with them, trying to like, how's it going? Fine,
right? You and know, there was no FaceTime, no Zoom,
no, and they were boring as shit on the phone. And I, you know, and I was like, what did you do today? Well, I said my lines, and
was it exciting?
Yeah,
yeah,
but
it
actually opened up, you know, making myself stop.
Yeah.
Made me find other things to do and other passions and other ways of spending my time that I just couldn't even conceive. Because I've always been work-oriented, you know? I mean, have to be productive.
Well, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Maryland, in Bethesda, Maryland.
Really?
Yeah.
And what'd your family, what business were
they in? My dad's a social worker, was a social worker. My mom was a teacher.
Wow, that's like the noble Jewish.
Yeah, exactly.
Civic responsibility jobs.
Exactly. And I was like, why are you so... When my mother, it was wonderful. When my mother first saw, I was a shy kid, and then I ended up in a play.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
My mother said, "What? That was so sad to see you up there. That you need to get up in front of people like this and show off. What is that about?
Really?
And, so there and was the whole showbiz. You know, it was my sister was a lawyer. You know, like a labor lawyer.
Already?
Like, so she was moving towards that, but it was.
What's the age difference between all the siblings?
Two between her and me. And
she's
then,
older?
Yeah. And then my brother's 6 years littler than me.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah.
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 She thought you it wasn't humble.
Yeah, and the whole thing didn't have a...
Did you tell her, like, maybe if you guys had loved me more?
That's what she said. I said, it's not that. It's because David Rosenthal's getting all the fucking girls. And
David Rosenthal, that guy. What happened to David Rosenthal?
David has a good voiceover career.
Oh, he does?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he stayed in the game.
Yeah, he did.
From high school.
Oh, he was
He's out here?
Talented. Yeah, I think he was up in San Francisco working in that video world.
Oh, you remain friends with him?
I do.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
How long have you known him? Since second grade, third grade, fourth grade? What?
Fifth.
Isn't that crazy? It's weird because I have a friend from Hebrew school, and he's my oldest friend. And, you know, I don't talk to him all the time, but I've seen him more lately because I go back to New Mexico where I grew up. But there is that bond built among Jews. That
and the Hebrew school thing is the rite of passage, you know.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's a different. It's like a. I don't want to say secret society. I don't want to feed the machine. But there is something about Jewish kids.
Well, familiarity. I mean, was there a lot of Jews in New Mexico?
Yeah, many got out there. They ran away from the East Coast.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't huge, but I mean, there's right now. When I was growing up, there was a conservative temple, there was a reform temple, and I think there's a Chabad there now, but they're everywhere.
Chabad, yeah.
There's a Chabad here in Glendale, and I'm who's going there? I just drive by it when I go hike, and it's just, it never looks like there's anyone in the parking lot, and there's a security guard out front.
Exactly.
Now.
I don't know what that whole thing is.
My dad used to go pester the Chabad in New Mexico because he had nothing better to do.
Right on.
He'd just go out there and like argue with the rabbi for no reason.
Exactly.
But anyway,
that's a good Jew.
Yeah. So, all right. So you're there. You do your play. You're a shy kid. Because believe it or not, we'll get there. But like, I was a big fan of you. I felt like Diner somehow changed my life in a way. It's kind of interesting. But so you're now your parents, they're politically active people or what are they, just regular?
That was the thing with the Jewish thing as a kid was that it was D.C., outside D.C. in the 60s.
Okay.
So the kids who were teaching Hebrew school were college kids.
Right.
Active, going to peace marches, trying to make understanding the relevancy of what that Jewish thing was about.
But you remember Nixon and whatnot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was delivering the Washington Post through the whole, so I got to read the Bernstein, Woodward and Bernstein stuff.
Oh, in real time.
At 4 o'clock in the morning.
And you were reading that? How old were you? You were interested in that? You were brought up to be interested in that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was D.C. It was like I was a little hippie. My hair was down to the middle of my back.
Right.
It was the 60s. That was what I wanted to be.
You're 6 years older than me, so I caught the crashing wave of it.
Right, and I was late, too, to it, too. You know, I mean, the kids, like, the draft stopped.
You were born in, what, 57?
Yeah, so I was before the draft, but the kids older than us were getting drafted.
So you knew kids in the neighborhood who went off. So, but that's a heavy time, man.
It was a heavy time
to be a preteen teen.
It was.
A lot of shit going on.
It was a wonderful time, you know.
Music, righteousness.
And the comedy.
Oh, yeah.
The comedy that was starting to, bubble up.
You gravitated towards it?
I loved it.
Who?
I mean, just as a... there was no conception of show business anything.
Yeah.
Just like I love to laugh at everything from, Get Smart, Smothers Brothers,
Smothers Brothers.
I mean, it was all
provocative.
And the music,
stuff.
And George Carlin was coming out, Robert Klein.
Robert Klein, Child of the 50s, big record.
I probably have it memorized.
Really? He was your guy, huh?
All of them. The albums were, the Bill Cosby albums.
Yeah.
Yeah. Played him over and over.
A little late for Lenny Bruce, probably?
A little bit.
And he was a little dense.
Yeah, a little too, he was too intellectual for my speed.
Like you remember Jonathan Winters and that kind of stuff?
On the floor with Jonathan Winters, you know?
So you guys had all the records at home?
Yeah, yeah. And, and Dick Van Dyke.
Do you live by Dick Van Dyke?
I used to live by Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, you don't live out there anymore?
In Malibu.
Yeah.
I don't live there anymore, no.
Oh, really?
No.
You still on the West Coast?
Or? Yeah, I live out towards Ventura.
Oh, okay.
So I got out of, once I started backing away.
It was a money-saving thing? Or
No, it was.
Was it a fire thing?
No, it was a people thing.
Oh.
Malibu
pretty
was a
insulated.
Beautiful place to raise the kids when we first got here.
Yeah.
But as it developed into what Malibu is now and the mansions going up attitude.
So you were there, it was still kind of a little rural and funky.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Dylan was still out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just small town.
Yeah.
It was a real, actual small town.
Right.
That I could raise the kids. They rode their bike to school.
Yeah.
I coached the baseball team and did all the regular stuff.
Yeah.
But it just sort of, I was there 25 years or something and it changed a lot of great things happened there, but I guess got claustrophobic.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I don't like.
Yeah. So you're riding on your bike delivering papers?
I was walking. I had a baby. The guy who gave me the paper route gave me a baby carriage that I carried the papers. I had a baby carriage and the front and the back.
Right? People knew you? Saw you coming?
No. It was 4 o'clock in the friggin' morning.
And you're throwing papers on porches?
No. Got to put them in the door.
Oh.
It's the Washington Post.
You're still mad about it.
You know, I was writing this book thing, you know, and had to like go into it. And I realized like, yeah, that was like terrible. I was in the child labor forced market there because I was making, you know, and then I had to pay for the papers.
Yeah. But that's one of those jobs where you learn the importance of work. I can't imagine your parents were like, you're not getting any money.
Right.
You got to go out there and do this. They do that?
Yeah. Yes. That was it.
Go learn how to be part of the proletariat.
Make money. Make your own way.
Social work's interesting, though. So your old man was, he never got into a private practice, a therapy practice?
He was social work? He was like assistant secretary at HEW. Health, education, and welfare.
Okay.
It turned into Health and Human Services, now I think they named it or something. But he was he was called to service by John Kennedy.
Okay.
And moved us there and was developing programs for juvenile delinquency keeping kids out of prison and things like that. So he was kind of, he started at Jewish community centers as a organizer and then sort of went into the government part of it.
Okay.
So that, it wasn't the social work of the therapy kind.
Okay,
it was
more of that. Oh, it was more developmental policy.
And social justice.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And where'd they come from originally? New
Philly.
York? Oh, from Philly.
Yeah.
Philly Jews.
Yeah, Philly Jews.
Philly's heavy. You got people there still?
Probably, but my grandparents, they're all gone.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Your folks gone too?
My dad passed. My mom is with, she lives in our guest house.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I live with my mother. Who would have thought it?
It all comes full circle, buddy.
Do you have, are your parents?
They're around, but they're not, I'm not moving them in. but I think for the kids, it's good, right?
The kids are my kids are
gone.
My son is turning 42 this
week. That's crazy,
isn't it?
Yeah,
40 friggin' two.
Yeah, so he's like this grown ass old man.
He really is. You know, so I'm a grandpa like six times.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a different life.
So all right. So after the plays, so like, what makes you decide to commit to the acting racket?
You know, I really had no other option. I dropped out of high school. I couldn't read. I was a dyslexic kid.
But you didn't know that or what?
No, I knew it. I was a good artist. You know, I did painting and sculpture as a kid, and I did the plays, and I was in the choir and everything like that.
So you're an art guy.
Completely, you know, and sports.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't going to get into college, and I had gotten, after I did a little play, then I got the lead part in the plays, you know, and like got an identity that way, and stumbled into a crazy just apprenticeship one summer when I was 17.
Yeah.
Where I got the New York actors, and I had a little part in the play, and they said, you should move up to New York. And I said, okay.
And you were 18?
I was 17 when I went up, yeah.
And your parents were like, okay?
Yeah.
Because they just wanted you to do what you wanted to do?
No, they wanted me to get out of the house.
Oh.
They just said, when you're 18, we know you're not going to college, but one way or the other, you're not living here.
Really? But were they supportive of your... No.
Not particularly. I mean, not unsupportive. Mm. Just, you know, I've been bred to be an independent person my whole life, so they and I appreciate that, you know.
But they
said go do your thing.
So what was the experience in New York at that time? What are we talking, like
1975?
All right, so you know, second generation method people, some of the first generation acting teachers were still there. And
yeah, I was not like
doing that.
I took a class with a great teacher, Austin Pendleton. I don't know if you know Austin. But but then Austin gave me a job.
What was the school?
HB Studios.
Yeah, a lot of people went through there.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
But then Austin gave me a part in a play he was directing and was like, all right, well, I don't need acting class anymore. Because I wasn't like, I still can't read a Shakespeare play. Or, yeah. I'm not a classic, classically trained actor. And I don't have that passion for the literature of it. I enjoy the storytelling part of it. Yeah. You know, I was good at that. I could emote my feelings or be, you know, whatever. But it wasn't, I wasn't going to be like a Yale-trained anything or other. So I got a gig right out of the acting class.
I guess they needed kids. I guess it was sort of a benefit to be a kid that had some sort of natural chops.
Right. Because I'd work for absolutely nothing and do a lot, you know.
Right.
On the plays, I was not
You remember the play?
Benito Cereno. I played the soldier.
Yeah.
Aye, sir.
Yeah.
You know, but it was, do you remember the actor Roscoe Lee Brown?
Yeah.
So Roscoe was in it and, you know, and my.
Well, he's one of those guys that talked like this, right?
Beautiful. I mean, and so well trained in that voice.
Yeah.
And when my mom came and saw the play and like Roscoe told her I was a good actor and it was like, okay. I got a stamp of approval.
Oh, that's
there.
Good. So that's helpful.
Funny. Yeah. And yeah, just kind of.
So you're kicking around the theater scene in New York?
Yeah. Yeah. For about 12 years or so.
Really?
Yeah.
So like who was around? I mean, do you have contemporaries that are still in the racket?
Oh, yeah. John Hurd was, I mean, Hurd took me in when the first day I got there. His roommate.
John Hurd.
Yeah.
So he's intense. He was.
He was. He's gone.
Yeah.
Christopher Curry, Bruce McGill, John Goodman was in the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a bunch of theater rats.
Wow, you were roommates with John Hurd.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, John, roommates. I slept on the sofa. They had their apartment.
Were they older than you or no?
Oh, yeah. John's was 15 years old. I was the puppy.
Because he was kind of hardcore, wasn't he?
Yeah. So fucking fun. Oh, I got to run with the big boys.
Who did I talk to? Was he married? Was he married to Melissa Leo at some point?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Margot Kidder.
Wow.
For about a week.
And, wow. Margot these are intense women. And that's a diplomatic word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And John was just a gem. I love him and miss him. And, you know. No, it was a
good
wonderful friggin' time. It was New York was a little dangerous.
Were you there
funky.
When he got Cutter's Way?
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
What a fucking movie.
Well, he was the first guy in the crowd to get in a movie. So, like, you know, everybody.
Was it that movie?
No. It was Between the Lines.
Okay.
And then Chilly Scenes of Winter. He got a couple of Joan Micklin Silver films, like these small films.
Yeah.
And kept moving up. But John was, you know, John had a little money in his pocket. He bought us all food. Things like that. But it was also watching. I had no idea about even being in a movie.
Right.
That was.
You were just sort of, I'm going to do plays.
Exactly. I'm going to be an actor.
And you're doing a lot of plays?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did a lot. I mean.
Like off-Broadway stuff?
Yeah,
weird off-Broadway. Stuff.
A couple of weird ones. And then I got I got into one of the first things they did at Manhattan Theater Club. And then I did. I replaced Malkovich in True West. There was a legendary production when John sort of hit the.
You know, dude, I saw you in True West, but I felt like that was after some movies.
I'd done a few movies by then. Yeah.
So, like,
saw me in True West.
I did.
Really?
I went and looked it up because I remembered yesterday because I knew I was going to talk to you, and I knew I had a very sort of in my mind personal relationship with at least a couple of the guys in Diner in my mind.
Really? Oh.
and you know, I'd seen Breaking Away. And I think those were the two that were out. And then when I must have been in my first year of college or something. I don't know. I'd gone to New York to see you in True West.
Oh, man.
But when I looked it up, it said that Tim Matheson played opposite of you. But I don't think he was there the night that I saw you. The night I saw you, I didn't know the guy. He was one of the first, the originator of the role, right?
Well, Gary Sinise originated the
role.
So I did it with Gary for a while.
Yeah.
And then Tim was going to come in, but he got a job or something. So I did it with Jerry Burns, the understudy, and we had a fucking blast.
That must have been who I saw you with. And at the Cherry Lane, right?
At the Cherry Lane. And Jerry and I were like wild animals by the, you know, I mean, he was so fun. Then Tim came in, and I was already like, I'd been in the play like 3 months, and Tim finally got out of his movie and came to the show. And he joined the play, and he was like, you're beating me up way too much. Like, you're hurting me. And I said, you know, I'm sorry. Like, that's the 2 days later, I showed up to the play, and there was two security guards there.
Yeah.
And I'd been fired. So I only did the play with Tim like four times, but then Tim didn't want me doing the play because I was, and I was probably out of control, but I always wore it as a badge of honor that they had security people.
Because
there.
Your Lee was too tough.
I was a tough motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Malkovich.
Such a great part.
Did you see it with Malkovich?
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't imagine that. I mean, it must have been amazing.
When I went, when they called me and said they'd asked me to be in the play.
Yeah.
I went to the first day of rehearsal. I thought I was playing the other part.
What's that, Austin?
Austin.
Yeah.
Because I thought, well, I'm not going to play that part. I thought I'm going to be the intellectual brother, you know.
The writer.
Like, the writer. And sure enough, like, I was playing that part. What a mind fuck that was.
Well, I mean, that's why I think I went to see you. I was like, after watching Breaking Away and I think Diner was out. And it must have been that same year.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably,
and I was like, how's this guy going to do that? And
I wondered the same thing.
But I remember you did a great job.
Well, thank you.
I mean, because like, however anybody's going to interpret Lee as, you know, either a real guy or not a real guy or what it means to be out there on the edge.
Right.
And come in to kind of blow your brother's world up.
Exactly.
You know, because I always thought of you as slightly goofy.
It really was one of the first parts it changed me as an actor to understand how to live inside a character like that.
To access that anger.
That anger and the humor.
Yeah.
Like it was rip roaring fucking laughs in that thing. And it's like, you can get laughs that way. That was a whole different way than the humble, shy kid I was playing in Breaking Away. You know, it was like a whole different gear and really, really just was so thrilling and just expanding for my own self.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and also your skill set, right?
Yeah, completely.
But like the thing I remember about that play, though, that I thought was so mind blowing in my early sort of intellectual sort of aspirations was that, you know, when you do the toast, the entire theater smells like toast. You know, and it was this other element. That was, you know, sensory.
Exactly.
And it changes the way, you know, you think in
the
that
toast,
moment.
Absolutely. 100%, Mark.
Like,
you know, and acting in it, like not only, I drank a 6-pack of beer every show, 2 shows on Friday and Saturday.
Oh, so you're shit-faced by the second show.
No, it was just pumping through me. I could drink a whole 6-pack of beer.
Yeah.
And not feel it, and because I was in the, it was that sensory, the realities of those things were completely
and
different.
And that theater is so intimate, you know?
Right, you're right.
It was a big deal, man. But that was after, so you're just kicking around New York, how do you get Breaking Away? Because, you know, as this, you know, I mean, you're, you know, a kind of awkward Jewish kid from the East Coast, and you're going to play this, you know, Indiana townie. I mean, how did that happen?
Peter Yates was the director.
Yeah.
And just, I had done a play that I got an agent. One of the people who lived in Hurd's building.
What was the play that got you the agent?
Almost Men.
Okay.
Down at HB.
Yeah.
I met my wife in that play.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I got an agent and she sent me out. So I'd had like 2 auditions for a movie.
Yeah.
And I went to that audition, but it turned out like Peter didn't even audition me. I sat with Peter while Peter talked on the telephone at ICM.
Yeah.
And then he I was like terrified because I didn't have an audition piece. So I thought I was going to have to do cold reading.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was nothing.
Because you have the dyslexia.
I couldn't fucking read. So I'm like, I was just panicked.
Yeah.
Anyway, Peter hands me the script and he says, come back next week. And so I went back the next week and it turned out it was a read through of the
movie.
Film.
Yeah.
In the conference room with all the actors around the whole table reading the thing.
Yeah.
And he said, all right, great. We'll see you in LA.
Huh.
And I was in the movie. So there was, I have no, it was like one of those touched by God moments. Like,
right.
How did that happen? I don't know how it happened.
Well, so how do you prepare? Like, if you do have that much trouble reading, was it just take you longer?
When you
take a script home,
yeah.
You just have to really sit with it and figure it out.
Yeah. But once if I get a chance to memorize it, I can act it. The fear is you hand it to me right now and I go, read it with, you know.
In real time.
But I learned to read, actually, doing the Wonder Years.
Oh, because it was all voiceover.
And I had to read it. They'd give me a new script and, like, I totally overcame that. In the room, they'd say, here's a rewrite. And, like, suddenly I'm cold reading.
And also, but also with a voiceover, it's not, you can redo it over and over.
Exactly. So the pressure was off.
Yeah.
And I really got my reading skills. So I could read anything you want.
Well, that's sort of interesting. Yeah. I talked to Mark Ruffalo recently, and he's got an issue with it. And I think that because it's so deliberate to process just the reading, it probably goes in deeper, quicker.
Maybe.
Well, you have to think about every fucking line.
You got to think about every line. Exactly. You got to.
Yeah.
And you go back because, like, did I understand that line?
Right.
I keep going back when I read
it. It's interesting. It's like it might be one of the few jobs where dyslexia.
That's interesting.
Actually, you know, gives you the time.
Right.
To process the story.
Right.
With a different pace.
That's I never thought of it. That's why I'm so good.
God damn it. We figured it out. So you're out there in Indiana. With Quaid and Jackie Earl Haley and that guy Dennis Christopher, who I didn't see much of after that. But that must have been kind of intense. I mean, because, you know, Quaid was, he's his own thing, man.
Oh,
and
he
was always sort of his own thing, I guess. But you were all kind of kids, right?
We were all kids. You know, Jackie was the movie star. Jackie had done Bad News Bears. So that, again,
right.
I'd never been in a movie. I'd never auditioned for a movie. I never thought about being in a movie until I'd had an agent for 2 weeks.
Yeah, he was
before.
Like the bad kid
but
in Bad News Bears.
So, like, I saw, like, we'd go on the street and people would ask Jackie for his autograph.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and he was such a wonderful, humble dude.
And he was, like, out of it for a long time and he kind of resurfaced a few years
Came
ago.
Came back strong.
With, like,
man.
What was it, Little Children? Heavy role.
Right. He's such a good actor.
He's so good and an interesting presence.
But I think he had a lot, you know, he went and had a life in Texas for a while, I think. And
I think that's right. They found him. They dug him up for, I don't remember what the story is. I've never interviewed
him.
Yeah,
he was like doing real life kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But but when you worked with him, he was like the guy.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was, again, humble as hell. Dennis was already preening, you know.
Yeah,
he was, and cut. And,
And
funny. I mean, I loved it. I loved
it. Was that his first role?
No, he'd done.
Because his brother was at it before him.
Yeah.
His brother, Randy, was in Last Picture Show.
Right.
You
so
know?
Dennis was living under that shadow a little bit. But this one, he stepped up himself in that role.
Well, he turned in, like, you know, Dennis turned into a very proficient and, you know, kind of. He's a good actor.
Yeah.
Like, he can kind of do anything, you know. He was like, he's one of those guys that's like almost movie star, but not movie star enough to where it's going to stop him.
Right.
You know, so he could still
But he considered, you know, and he should. He's a, you know, I think he played Ronald Reagan. I mean, he can invest himself in a character. He doesn't just, I love movie stars who don't do anything, too. I mean, Harrison Ford or guys like that, they just stand there and be
themselves. They know how to do it. Yeah. Well, he was like, there's that one, Jesus, man. It was like later Quaid is really the best Quaid for me. That little movie he did with Topher Grace where he plays his boss, it's kind of a great movie. In Good Company is what it's called.
Okay.
And it's kind of a sweet little movie. He, you know, Topher Grace gets hired to be basically, you know, he's, I think, Quaid works at some sort of sporting goods corporation, and Topher Grace is brought in as the new hot young kid and kind of becomes his boss, but he doesn't know how to be a boss or a person. So, you know, Quaid's character has to find the humility to instead of being threatened to kind of mentor this kid. It was a cute movie.
Well, he picks really good movies, actually. Dennis is a super, super talented guy.
And so you go right from Breaking Away to Diner?
No, I went from Breaking Away to a few really shitty, tiny little parts because, like, the movie didn't come out for a year. So I Starting over, I did...
big comedy ladies in that.
Small... Yeah.
Jill Clayburgh.
I did three movies with Jill.
Candice Bergen.
Yeah.
She's great.
Love her.
Jill's great. Her daughter's great.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Lily Rabe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's David Rabe.
That's
and
right.
Jill's daughter.
Right.
She's great at it.
She's tremendous.
And, you know, David Rabe, that's heavy. Did you ever do Hurley Burley?
I never did. Oh. I got to meet David a few times, but super talented family.
So you do that. Small Circle of Friends.
Yeah. Did Small Circle of Friends.
Did a bit part in Stardust Memories.
Yes. So I'd got these like little parts.
What were you in Stardust Memories?
Stardust Memories, I believe I was a young actor.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right.
Hassling Woody Allen at...
hotel was.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I only saw it that one time.
That's right. And he was like, you know, you were running around pestering him.
But the beauty, he was my absolute idol.
Yeah.
And so the fact that I got to, he picked me to be in his movie. I went in for the audition and met him for a second. Because I remember I brought a picture of me as Tevye.
And
he let me, because I played Tevye in high school, and then so he let me improvise that. He thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
And then he called me back for a second day of shooting, which was really like Woody Allen.
Wow.
So I was feeling.
This is the earlier version of Woody Allen.
Yes.
Yes.
The,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
I loved him when he was funny.
Yeah. Sure.
Diner popped
up. Oh, you did
One
Trick Pony, too.
Yeah. Paul Simon.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
That was a weird movie. Like, it was sort of an autobiographical movie about
a musician.
You
got a good memory, dude. Yeah.
And I don't remember. I remember Paul's, his acting was okay.
Right.
But he's Paul Simon.
It was all about the music, and he never wanted to really act again. But, those are my two idols, Woody Allen and Paul Simon.
Yeah.
And there I was in the course of a year, I'd accomplished everything I set out to do as an actor, because I got to, you know, I hung out with Paul Simon and his brother Eddie for the night shooting, and I played a...
Eddie, the guitar teacher?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
I just remember when I lived in New York that, you know, he would have ads.
Ads on the radio.
Paul Simon's brother. The guitar teacher. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's funny.
So, I got to spend the night, filming with Paul Simon and hanging out in the trailer. And it was like, I was playing a Hare Krishna at the airport.
Okay.
But I had a bald wig and then a bad wig on top of that. And so I spent the whole night, I realized when I got back to the trailer and left after work, like, I just met my idol and I looked like a fucking idiot in a bad wig and a bald wig. And it's like, and I'm hanging with Paul and Eddie. And I'm like, oh, that's what I looked like.
You know who's got a great story about that? Ron, who's the, Ron from the big dude.
Perlman?
Yeah. He was on that Island of Dr. Moreau, and, and Brando is in that. And Perlman's in that goat head. He's got this goat head out, and he's like, all he wants to do is impress Brando. But
exactly.
He's just standing there with this goat head on, and it's too funny, man.
That's it, man, but you never know how you're going to meet your idols. But
So you did like a bunch of little parts before Diner.
Yeah, I had to. I had
but
zero,
you didn't feel like quitting?
Money. Quitting?
Yeah.
No, I started to make a little money.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was making, my wife and I were at zero.
Oh, you already
got
married?
Breaking away. No, we were living together.
Yeah. In New York?
Yeah.
Or
and then
village?
I got Upper West Side.
Okay.
But, I made like $8,000 on breaking away, and I was suddenly like, this is it.
And
then I made $400 on that and $500 on that. And then then Diner came along and I made 30 grand. And I was like, shit.
This is it. I'm winning.
I'm completely.
So, but Diner was a unique movie.
Mm.
Like it really, somehow or another, really connected.
Yeah.
Mickey Rourke,
Bacon.
Gutenberg, Bacon.
Come on.
Bacon, come, you've traveled far. When he's in the manger.
Oh.
But like it really landed with me. Maybe because I'm Jewish, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was so entertained by Paul Reiser.
Paul was the secret sauce of that whole thing, because the interesting thing with Barry in that one was he was ready to throw the script out.
And really?
We just improvised. I mean, we spent...
Yeah.
And we started improvising from the first time we met, and then we spent a month in the diner just bullshitting every, you know, a night shoot, month of night shoots.
Yeah.
And we all had parts. Reiser didn't really have a part in the movie.
Uh-huh.
But Reiser was a stand-up comic.
Right.
And funny as shit, and everybody had to keep up with Paul, because, like... We're improvising.
And he's like low key too.
But he was sharp as a fucking
cat. Sort of locked into that thing with the, you know, this kind of like kind of thoughtful guy, but it wasn't deep thoughts necessarily. You know, like, yeah.
He's still like that, by the way.
I know. I'm not comfortable with the word nuance. Right?
All of that stuff out of his head.
But that was all improvised.
All improvised. So it really. You know, we were all surprised when the movie came out that all that improvisation ended up at what the movie was. It was a bunch of guys hanging out bullshitting.
Yeah.
And that was that Barry had the balls and the confidence to say, that's the movie I want to make. There's no plot.
Other than you're moving towards that wedding.
The wedding.
Yeah.
And, which is all off screen.
But also the side stories like Mickey Rourke and your girlfriend, right?
Wife. Ellen Barkin. Yeah.
Ellen Barkin.
Yeah,
right.
He was trying to fuck my wife.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Come on.
I know. Ellen Barkin, you know, all the people really went on to have, you know, relatively big careers.
Isn't it incredible?
Certainly Kevin.
Yeah. No, and Mickey. I mean, Mickey's genius these days. He's a crazy guy, but what an actor.
Always, you know.
What an actor.
Yeah, I remember seeing him at a club in New York after I saw Diner and just being like, what is up with that dude? He's one of those character actors, but a movie star.
Movie star, yeah.
For sure, yeah. But like, you know, he always hung with tough guys.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Boxers.
And he was a boxer. He wasn't kidding around.
Because I guess that was, like, I can't remember what happened first, Diner or that. I think it was after that bit.
Body Heat.
It was after.
Diner was after. Yeah.
But that's what sort of made him, was that, like, I don't know, counselor. You know, like.
Yeah, riveting.
Yeah.
Riveting dude. And, again, that movie star thing where he is so confident in that he's just interesting to look at, that he doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't overact. His presence is so comfortable.
Once they know that and they're able to be gracious within it. I mean, I just learned this yesterday. I talked to Chris Pine, the actor, and he was talking about working with these guys who are movie stars, and the ones that are amazing are the ones that are grounded in it enough to allow space
exactly
for the other actors. And he learned that from Costner.
Another movie star who draws you in.
Yeah.
You know, I love actors. I don't have that skill. I'm always trying to do something or creating a character or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's the gift that we love in the movies is to just have your everyman be solid.
Or calm in
the center of a storm, and you ride along with them, and they bring you with them, and it's phenomenal.
Some of them aren't always every men, but, you know, you get them.
You get them, right.
The essence of their starness. So after, because here's the weird thing about my connection to Diner is, like, I was in, what year was that, 80? So I was in college, and I saw it in high school probably, or maybe just after. But I was down in New York from Boston, and I went to the comic strip. And I always wanted to do comedy, but I was not doing it because I was a kid. You know, I was, you know, not even 20 yet. But Reiser was sitting there, and I knew him from Diner, and I knew he was a comic, and he was just sitting in a booth by himself. And I remember going up to him and saying, like, "All right, I want to do comedy. How do I do it?" And he just said, "I don't know. You just got to do it." And that was it. That was my big interaction.
And you know what?
That's true.
That's probably true.
It is true. That's the thing. He wasn't being an asshole.
Get up and tell some fucking jokes.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Exactly. Yeah. No, Paul is still a dear, dear, dear friend.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
well, he's another guy that, like, made some bread and said, fuck it. And I'm going to raise my family and have a life. And then
he goes on, and he took
a bit of time off, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting...
I think he's doing a little stand-up. I don't know how it's going for him out there. Yeah,
He's so good. He's so fucking funny.
He's still pretty very much himself.
Yeah, and he just is, like, I don't know if you're that kind of comic, but, like, his mind goes to a joke it's like a computer. He gets a situation, something happens, his mind turns it into something funny immediately.
But as I recall, I think he's one of those guys that really, like, he wanted to act.
Yes.
Like, stand-up wasn't the end-all.
No.
And that when he did start acting, he really got away from it.
And then writing. He's a brilliant writer.
Yeah.
I mean, he's developed the Mad About You show.
Sure.
He writes. He writes a movie.
Yeah.
He produces a movie. He's this an incredible piano player, too.
Really?
Musician. I mean, just a deep, talented man.
Oh, that's good. But I mean, when you do Diner and you play that funny part, you feel for your guy, you know, more than the other guys, you know,
I'm married.
I'm
trapped.
Yeah. And you got the records. That's right. You were a record.
That's right.
Yeah. You're obsessed with the records. Everything had to be in order. Yeah.
That was a real character. That was a real character work because I'm a fucking slob. Yeah.
But do you know, like, at that point, do you know, like, well, I'm not a movie star per se. I'm a character actor
I loved that.
Yeah.
I never had a desire to be the main horse. I started to feel really good riding right behind the lead people. I want to be the best friend. That always feels good to me because, again, I mean, I don't remember thinking it then, but I know it to be true now.
Yeah.
I'm not the guy. I'm not the movie star. The camera doesn't bring that out in me when I stand there. Maybe more now.
Yeah.
I'm older. Maybe I give
or
something. And, you know, but even now I don't want to, I don't want to just stand there and be me.
You don't have to carry the fucking movie.
Exactly. Just come in, score.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've carried some movies. And, you know, the joke to me is if they're offering me the lead, I'm sure the director is a tall Jewish guy who sees himself in me and wants him to be the star of the movie. It's never going
to
work.
Did that turn out to be true?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
If you dig deep into that IMDb, there's a couple of Get Crazy.
Yeah.
The Boss's Wife. Where I'm the.
You're
the romantic
guy.
Lead is like, okay, that's not going to work. But the director, Ziggy Steinberg, saw me as the guy.
But you definitely had a good run after that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're always working, right?
Yep. You know, the goal at the time was to work with great directors.
Yeah.
That was, I leapfrogged up to an agent named Sam Cohn.
Yeah.
And Sam... He was Peter Yates' agent. So
right.
Sam, I mean, he was Woody Allen's agent.
But
Sam, you know, just said, just work with good directors.
But like in terms of like that being the goal of working with good directors, what do you get out of that? I mean, other than working with good directors, but do you learn?
Yeah, you learn. That's where I learned to love and understand the making of movies.
Yeah.
And sort of tickled my desire to be a director and to write movies. And I mean, that wasn't Sam's goal. It was to be in classy movies and get good parts.
But as you said, it doesn't always work out that way.
No. And, you know, you never know. But like seeing how Barry Levinson handled himself on the set and how Woody Allen directed a film and how Redford and how Schlesinger handles a crew, and you start to, you know, I got more and more experience on a set and seeing, what, I mean, and filmmaking really, as an art form, really started to mean something to me, as opposed to being an actor.
Sure. It took a long time to do it, though, for you, right?
Yeah.
To direct?
Yeah. I eventually got my first directing thing on The Wonder Years. When I got that gig, I made that part of my deal.
But that's a good way to start because, like, especially with a show that's already got a dug-in look, then you can work within that.
Right.
And so there's, you know, different skill set. The thing is what it is,
right.
But you can, you know, kind of.
And I was actually, I mean, I got to trail the director on the pilot because I wanted to do it. I directed one of the first episodes, but I didn't have to invent the look of the show. It was already there. The kids were cast. But it really, it just gave me a lot of confidence on the floor
and how
to run the show and edit and score and all the things that go into movie.
That's great.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
It's interesting about TV, though, that they do bring in a director to sort of like set the look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they kind of go away. And television directing was a great way to cut my teeth. And I've done it since. Like, I like to do it. I've done it on shows that I am in or have friends running.
You know? Sure.
But to go in as a TV director.
Just a guy.
On a, like that.
There's a lot of actors doing that.
Yeah. It's a good gig. Yeah. But I'm not interested in it.
Right. It's amazing, though. I think culturally, the next generation after mine was going to know you from those Home Alone movies and the City Slickers movies. But it's kind of astounding how much work you did with all these different people. I mean, like the Milagro Beanfield Awards, I don't remember what your role in that is, but that was kind of a beautiful movie.
Oh, one of my favorites of all time. Yeah.
And that was a Redford movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with a great, I played a social worker actually. And, but yeah, just, I mean.
And you did Hannah and Her Sisters, which is part of that trilogy, the last of the great Woody Allen movies, really.
So I couldn't ask for more of all the things I got to do. And then, when the Home Alone stuff happened, that was kind of a twist, because I'd never considered whether a movie was successful or not. I didn't, like, that ended up being the number one movie. And then the number one movie, like, week after week. And, and we were shooting City Slickers at the time, and Billy was like, your fucking movie's number one again. I'm like, yeah, okay. And then it's number one again. And I'm like, okay.
So, but that part, like, you know, was there any resistance to it? Like when you got offered it or read for it, how'd that work with Home Alone?
I wanted it desperately. It took me back to those comedy, all those comedy kids, people I loved, all the physical comedy.
Yeah.
Hughes wrote a script that, like when you see the movie, if you have the script, it's shot by shot. John wrote it shot by shot.
Right.
So when I read that script,
yeah,
I was on the floor laughing. Like, this is the craziest. And I'd done True West, which is not the same character, but the physicality,
Bad guy. So you're like, I can use it.
It was like, I know how to kind
Look
of
at
be
that.
An asshole.
Look at Sam Shepard's contribution to Home Alone.
To Home Alone.
Who knew?
An unknown little nugget there.
Yeah.
But no, I wanted to be in that very, very much.
Did you like have to read with Pesci before?
I went in and read. I knew Joe. Joe and I did a movie, what was that called? A Jill Clayburgh movie, I'm Dancing as Fast as I Can.
Yeah.
So Joe and I were buds.
Oh, so you knew him.
Became friends on that. And then, he was in this. No, I went in and read for Chris Columbus. And then I drove away and I thought, oh, shit, you know, I could do better. And I went back. I called my agent. I said, I could do that better. And they said, no, you're fine. And I said, no, I'm going back.
Yeah.
So I went back and I read for it twice that same day.
For Home Alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I really, really did want that.
Yeah.
I mean, just because it made me laugh so fucking hard.
What were the choices that you made the second time? Why did you think you didn't do well?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Oh.
I just thought, I don't remember what I did. I just remember going, I want it so bad.
Yeah.
Did I do it? My mind, I was like rerunning it in my head. And it was like, no, just go back.
Yeah.
And Chris said, you didn't have to come back. I was going to give it to you anyway. And, and I might have fucked that up. But but I think when I did it the second time, I kind of did it. I mean, you know, again, it's not high art, but whatever the sense of humor. I mean, there was also a sense in the first one, there was a sense of danger. Like you had to, with Chris wanted, and that's one reason why you get Pesci. Like they should be scary to start with.
Right.
So that there's a threat.
But not so scary that the kid is threatened in a real way.
Right. But just, I mean, and then when we did the sequel, it was like, they're not scary at all. They're just idiots.
They're
but
clowns.
There was a, but at the beginning of it, it's like, you know, you got Joe. And so I think maybe when I went back the second time, I sort of had a good balance between silly and the threatening.
And then like in the movies, you're basically in a comedy team with Pesci. And you got to figure out that dynamic. And I imagine it just happened naturally.
Completely.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe was, we had a couple beers and like we all sat around and Joe's like, I'm going to make up a cartoon. So when he gets hit in the head with something, he's like, Resum frickin' frickin' frickin'
frickin'.
You know, so he was like, he was going to be Mo, and I was going to be
Curly
and Larry, both like a combo of them.
Right.
And he was going to be the brains of the organization.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It fit like a glove because we were already kind of goofy friends.
Yeah.
And
Had he done Goodfellas already?
No.
That's crazy.
No, he done. I think he done Raging Bull.
Oh, right.
But
which is actually kind of a funny part.
Oh,
you know,
Joe. I mean, he makes me laugh. He's so fucking intense. He makes me laugh.
Yeah.
At how scary he is.
Yeah. When he wants to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind
and
of.
And then
amazing.
It comes out. Am I a clown? You know, I mean, it's like
the
perfect.
Combination. No, how am I funny?
Yeah.
So wait, now City Slickers, that's some comedy heavyweights that you're dealing with, right?
Yeah.
And Jack Palance, like a legend. Did you get to talk to him?
I did. You know, I really got to, I got to know Jack more on the second one.
Yeah.
Because we had more time on the set. But
right.
Palance was just an intimidating, wonderful dude. And it finally broke through. I mean, he was just a genius of an artist.
Yeah.
He was a painter and a poet.
Yeah.
And he's the one who, and a rancher.
Yeah.
And he's the one who really inspired me to put down the acting thing and pursue other art forms.
Made you realize that you could have a bigger life. A
bigger life, exactly. Jack really inspired me on that second one especially. And it's like, you know, you could, and I ended up buying a cattle ranch and getting into my sculpture life and quitting the movies kind of thing.
Just from Home Alone and City Slicker money?
Yeah, sequel. I got good paydays on the sequel. And then it was like, well, you know.
You became a farmer?
I did.
For a while?
Still am. I told you, I live on a tangerine farm. I gave you the friggin' juice.
Yeah, I know, but that's different than cattle.
Well, I have a cattle ranch, too.
You do?
Yeah.
And what do you do with it? Are you out there with the cows?
Well, I have a cattleman who runs his cows, but I herd them with him. I don't ride a horse. I'm on my quad. I help them brand stuff, and I take hikes. And
where is that?
It's in Central Valley.
Oh, it's here. It's all here.
Yeah, all in California.
Oh, no shit.
I split my time between a 40-acre avocado tangerine farm.
Oh, you do avocados, too?
Yeah. And
okay.
A 500-acre cattle ranch. So I'm a total California. My wife's family were all California farmers and ranchers.
Really?
So she really
grew up in it, and she's comfortable in it?
Yeah. So I just ride along on her, as I do with my whole life.
That's
just
crazy.
She does everything.
Yeah, so, and I remember you did that movie, Very Bad Things.
That's a great one, too. I mean, that's one of my favorites.
I know Berg.
And again, watching great direct, that was Peter's first movie, and you see a director like really coming to their own before your very eyes.
He's a real I did a bit part years ago. Berg was a friend of my buddy. You know Steve Brill, the director.
Yeah.
Well, Brill lived in Culver City. I went to college with Brill, and I came out here to write with Brill. We had done comedy in college together. So I was living with him in Culver City in this apartment, and him and Berg were buddies, and then Berg moved in, and I got pushed out. But there was a period there where it was me, Berg, and Brill, and they were, like, so aware of how show business worked and where they were going, and I was just sort of like, I just want to be a comic. I don't even know how to live as a grown-up, you know?
Yeah.
But I've interviewed
Peter really had that vision, and you watch where he went from Very Bad Things and then took on Epic.
Yeah, he's got a lot of swagger, that guy.
Yeah. And
like he's like, you know, I did a bit part in his movie recently.
Which one?
It was the one with Mark Wahlberg, Spencer Confidential. It was for Netflix, but like I'd never work with Pete as a director, but he's like a megaphone guy. Like, you know, all of a sudden you're on, he's like, okay, let's do it again.
Is that really?
Yeah.
Because he wound us up. I mean, that was the fun thing and Very Bad Thing.
It's a pretty disturbing, fun movie.
It is. And he was like, we're going to start the dial at 11 and take it up from there. And he really wound us all. I mean, he was a terrific, I thought he worked brilliantly with actors and great performance.
Well, he's an actor. I rewatched Collateral.
Oh.
The Michael Mann movie.
Yeah, right.
And he plays a cop in that. It's not a huge part, but he's in there.
Yeah.
And I just watched that thing 2 months ago, but it's one of those movies where I just want to watch the beginning, and then all of a sudden you're watching the whole fucking movie again.
Yeah, I never go back and watch movies again.
You don't? I have to now. Because, like, I'm 60, and movies that had an impact on me when I was in my 20s, especially movies that were done by artists, it's like, what did I really understand?
Right. Why do I love that? Why is that?
I know it was great, but do I really know why?
Right.
Like, I watched Paris, Texas. It changed my life. Like, you know, when I was in my 20s, I watched it. I'm like, I knew it was amazing, but there was no way I could have gotten the depth of it.
No, it's smart to do it, but there's just so much to watch. I can't, I don't want to go backwards.
I don't know, but you get to an age, it's sort of like, why not go to the ones that were amazing? Because, like, I miss everything. I had to watch Oppenheimer a second time because, like, it's almost a disservice to the director who spent, like, a decade layering this thing.
And we're just going to watch it and eat the popcorn and that was in and out. Yeah,
yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
So were you successful in, like, was there actually a time where you took several years off or pulled out?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think I did, like, once in a while I would pop out and do something.
Yeah.
Just to, like, I wasn't quite ready to tell my agents I'm gone, but... since I moved to this other farm, especially I really got involved in my sculpture life.
Oh yeah.
So I, once
when did
I,
that kick in?
That was probably 20 years ago. I started renting a studio down in Culver City.
Uh-huh.
And I'd done sculpture when I was a kid. But then I rented a space and it was like in the art district on, La Cienega, so like I had foot traffic coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I had to really take myself it was the first time I took myself seriously.
Who's your inspiration for sculpture? I mean, you're not an abstract art guy.
No, I'm figurative.
Yeah.
Rodin.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like.
And so what do you do casting?
Yeah, I sculpt in clay. Then
yeah.
I make mold and then I do a commissions for cities and I've.
You got a lot of people. Stuff out there?
I do, you know, and it's quite satisfying artistically because I don't sit in the trailer.
Yeah.
I work all day.
Yeah.
You know.
With the clay. Yeah.
And I've done a few things in other medium plaster and things like that, but like I found a job that I can go to every day and do and not have anybody tell me when to do it and what it should be.
Yeah.
And it. I tell
or to
my
do it again.
Yeah, right. But I just did it. I thought that was good. So that's been is very satisfying. Sort of put the acting thing in a different perspective, creative wise.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't need it to be my art form.
So you're back to your original sort of self.
Yeah.
You know, like engaging in all the arts and having the freedom to do that. Now,
correct.
What about the directing? How was your success in that outside of television?
It was, you know, good. And, I mean, I did a movie called Rookie of the Year.
It was a baseball movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that was a nice big hit. And I got a development deal at Fox and developed movies. It was also the time when the sequels were coming for Home Alone. So it was like, what am I going to jump out and like do direct that when I could cash in over there? I still want to do it again. But it was also very consuming because one of the reasons I pulled back was my kids were, I was trying to be there for them.
Yeah. And directing, you're in for a year or two.
That's it. You know, so the timing of it never worked out. I think I want to come back to it at some point now.
Yeah.
But it's a tricky game to get into again. And, you know, I mean, I've got little scripts I've written and are out there. But I can't put my heart into it anymore. You know, it's too heartbreaking.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Have you written scripts?
Well, I have. I don't love writing, but I mean, I've definitely talked to enough guys where, you know, and especially with the media landscape, it's like you better really want to make the movie.
Right.
And that's got to be your end game.
Right.
Because, you know, the best that can happen or at the very least is just some platform picks it up and it's out there. You know, if you're not making a blockbuster, you're just sort of like, well, you can find it on Tubi or whatever.
And if you don't even get to Tubi, then you've got a script in your drawer that it's only a blueprint for a movie.
Yeah,
so,
So the joy has got to be to make it.
Right.
And without expectation.
Right. And that's where, like, I just don't have it in me to fight to get it made and all of it.
Get
I still do it. But, like, I like the writing. Like, I'm writing a thing now. One of the movies you haven't mentioned, which I'm a little hurt by.
I'm sorry.
Chud.
Oh, yeah, of course, Chud. Yeah, cannibalistic humanoid. What is it?
Underground Dwellers.
Yeah.
I ended up with the stage rights to Chud.
Okay.
So I am actually, it's actually happening, moving along, but I'm...
Doing a play?
The musical.
Of Chud.
With CeeLo Green
okay.
as the composer.
Wow. That's pretty big.
So I'm like writing the book.
So
and
it's a CeeLo's, campy, funny horror comedy.
Yeah.
Musical.
Yeah. But a little less campy with CeeLo's music. His songs are fucking great.
So that's happening.
Yeah. I've got like 10 songs so far. But I love the writing of it. Like I don't have to.
Yeah.
I like the pressure of I've got another real Broadway producers who are going to be involved with all
sure.
that. So it's this is a big day for me that I left my house and put on a pair of pants because I just like creating shit in my own little world.
Right.
And when I have to actually get out there and sell and do and sell myself. And so I like I'm tired of it.
Yeah,
of the selling.
Yeah,
the selling is the hard part. You're out there all the time. I mean, you're you know you.
I don't sell much. You know, I didn't like. You know, I never set out to be an actor, or maybe I just didn't really pursue it much. I just wanted to do comedy, and you know, I do this, and my partner and I, my producer, business partner. You know, we have complete control over this, and I got complete control.
No, when you're doing it at your house, which is genius. Like, you know,
but I just took a role that I really didn't. You know, I don't need to do anything really because of my life is pretty small, and I'm not looking to make it bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's some part of me that wants to act. So I took a role, and it was a real struggle to decide to do it because there's so much about the process of acting that I find tedious and annoying. But no, I'm locked in.
Yeah.
So now I got to get that in my head that the anxiety.
You have to go somewhere?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I had to figure out how do I keep doing this and doing that because this is really my job. And, you know, but like I imagine you had to deal with that a lot about these decisions to do things. It's a fucking nightmare.
It is.
Especially if you don't need to do it.
Right. And that's why I finally said to myself, why I'm going to leave here. I'm going to go make some good money.
Yeah.
But like the whole family's here.
Yeah.
Everything interesting is happening here.
Yeah.
And I finally, that's what I just said. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not sitting in a hotel. I'm not sitting in a camper. And it freed me to, again, sculpt ranch.
I
started a Boys and Girls Club, you know, got into my public service. I got to give back like my parents did in their world and got to tap into that part of me. Now I got grandkids who come over and like,
what do you need to push?
Like, what is it? Yeah.
But you did a lot of little bit parts in TV. That's got to be easy.
I've done a couple. I don't know. TV. I don't know what I've done. This year I went back and I did a part on a Apple show.
Oh, yeah.
Where I played the head of NASA.
Oh, good. That's good.
Which is typecasting.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and that was like For All Mankind, it was called.
Yeah.
And it was like, I mean, it was.
TV was never your thing, really?
Well it's the same. I mean, it's TV and movie.
Bigger commitment.
Well,
TV.
You're locked in, you know, and. No, but to me, it's a, I mean, it's the camera and me.
Right.
I mean,
okay.
It's like acting. I'm turning the lines.
Sure.
I'm trying to feel the character and whatever.
Sure.
But and it was okay to do, but I it didn't spark me to go. I gotta get out there.
And
I need the part of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Like the part of a. I don't want the part of a lifetime.
Yeah. That's behind you.
Yeah. I'm proud of my body of work.
Yeah.
I don't need to go like do shit that I'm not proud of.
Right.
And start.
Has that happened?
I mean, look at, every other one on the IMDb, but.
I just want to make sure you had clarity about you.
About my failures. I do, Mom. I mean, Mark. I don't want to be curmudgeon-y about it.
Yeah.
It's not all you.
I mean, it's just you don't know what's going to happen with something that seemed good.
Yeah. And I like. I love filmmaking, so and I like playing my role in it sometimes. I like being in control of it. I like writing it. I'm still addicted to that whole process and the magic that
– because
I've also seen – and it's taken me a while to accept it, but, you know, a connection with an audience, like that Home Alone thing is a phenomenon that took me a long time to digest, like – that people love it, that yeah. I get to be a tiny part of their holiday, their family gathering.
Their memories, their life.
Their memories. Yeah. I grew up on you, and all that. And it's like, you've had movies that impact you and you say, I got to see that one again. So I'm honored to be part of that that world and that art form.
But you don't have to chase it anymore.
I don't, because I don't need to, I don't want to, I don't want to do things that don't have the quality that I already have sort of done.
Well, you seem good.
Thank you.
We didn't really talk about the reason you're here, which is writing a book. So you wrote the book.
Right.
But what compelled you to write the book?
Writing the book basically started as just wanting to stop.
Yeah.
I've been always going and making jobs for myself and doing things and working in sculpture and acting and writing, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, like, how did this happen?
Like,
how did I end up as a 65-year-old guy with these kids, with this career, with this fan base, with this, this wife and these farms and all this stuff? And so
an important part.
So I started making a list. Like, I just said, what's the first thing I remember? Like, what happened?
Yeah.
Well, I was born there. And then I just made a list of...
Not even outline, just a...
No, just a list like...
a chronological list.
Yeah, chronological list. And then I went to that elementary school and that...
Right.
And it was like, and it took a few days to just build that to say, and then I got to here.
Right.
It was like, okay. And then I thought, well... You know, I always turn something into a job in a way, just so I. But I decided to like say those could be chapter headings.
Yeah,
those could be chapter headings. So what would a chapter look like?
Right.
And I wrote a chapter. I wrote the first thing I wrote was about driving. I did a Robert Redford directed me in a movie.
Right.
And Bob let me drive his Porsche one day, me and Bob driving his Porsche. So I thought, hey, that's kind of funny, because I wanted to just like see what it would sound like. So I wrote that chapter and it was kind of funny. And then I wrote another chapter and then I sort of.
So it almost was an exercise. You weren't thinking like, I want to sell a book.
Not at all.
You were just, it was just an extent. It was you kind of, trying to reflect on your life.
Exactly. It was just regrouping.
And when I've written, though, I find that, like, when you start putting things together, that because you just move through life and it's just one thing after another, that all of a sudden you can kind of see intentions. You can kind of see how it affected you. You can kind of see how it was connected to other things. And you can kind of, fortify the memories with meaning.
Correct. And track the evolution of those feelings and why I did them and the ramifications of them, the choices I've made. And so I ended up giving myself the job of writing a book.
Wow.
And then I wrote it, and then my agent said, well, let me read it. They thought it was funny, and they sent it to publishers. I said, well, like, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
And like, now I'm going to put it out as an author. I'm not an author.
Right.
I can't even fucking read a book, let alone write a book.
Yeah.
But then when I... So what I did was, and I did want to make the point.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm giving the money away.
Yeah.
I'm giving the money to the Boys and Girls Club. I started a Boys and Girls Club. They're a wonderful organization.
Yeah.
I said, I don't want to be in the marketplace. Do you like me?
Oh, yeah.
You're reading my book. Yeah. Do you, all that.
Yeah.
Just, I'm giving the money away. It's still an artistic endeavor. It's still a personal journey.
Yeah.
I hope people connect. People have enjoyed, reading it, and I hope it's funny and all that. But that was really the reason for writing it, just to regroup.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because now I've commodified, is that the word, the stories.
Right.
So like—
What do you mean?
The problem of it, and maybe you've had this because you said you've written, like, now that story's locked.
Right.
Now that story about Robert Redford driving his car, like, that's the story. That's how I know it now.
Well, there's A plus B, you know, equals this to stories, but like, you know, how it evolves in your memory or once right. you get it down, you might, you know, 10 years from now go like, oh, yeah, I forgot to.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, so I don't want to lock in my own, like just.
That's all right.
Lock it in.
Yeah, but yeah.
It's been very kind of a fun.
And neither of your kids are in show business, right?
No, I've got three, all of them not.
Oh, three.
Yeah, three kids, yeah.
That's interesting.
A state senator,
wow.
a doctor.
Really?
And a musician / rabbi.
He's a rabbi.
She.
No what kidding.
What a sexist pig.
Oh, sorry.
Women can be rabbis.
I know that, yeah. And musicians.
Yes.
And a lot of the musical rabbis are women.
Yeah.
Well, that all seems like a good intention. Now, do you think you'll be able to ultimately separate yourself from the expectation once it's out? Or you think you're going to be able to be like, how many we sell?
No, I don't care. Really, really don't. I mean, again, this was a big day for me to come. I hide out in my studio all day. I write, I sculpt, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So I'm going to force myself.
To engage with the reaction.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah. I think I can do it.
All right. Well, you get back to me.
I don't have social media. I don't have. I've started doing a little bit of that. They said, you know.
There you go. That's how they get you.
But I don't know how to get on it to see anything.
Oh, good. You just have people doing it.
Yeah, I have people send it out.
Well, don't.
I see you do it.
Occasionally. I've pulled back a lot.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
It's not just a matter of knowing. It's also that, you know, every fucking person in the world has access to you. Once you start doing, you know, looking at your own social media, then you see just anybody is making
what I decided
comment.
To do was like I took some videos of my sculptures.
Yeah.
I made a funny video of like me being the pretentious author. It's like I'm only putting stuff out that I think is fun.
Good. Just don't just.
I won't read anything.
Okay. All right, I'll hold you to that.
Okay.
It was great talking to you.
You too, Mark.
Thanks for doing it.
My pleasure.
There you go, folks. Daniel Stern, great guy. Fun talk. The book Home and Alone comes out tomorrow. Hang out for a minute.
Manchmal willst du einfach nur ans Meer. Oder durch die Straßen einer lebendigen Stadt schlendern. Oder endlich den Moment genießen. Einfach die Welt mit TUI neu erleben. Mit TUI reist du so, wie du willst. Als Familie, zu zweit oder einfach allein. Flexibel, sicher und immer mit dem guten Gefühl, dass jemand da ist, wenn es drauf ankommt. Gestalte mit TUI Urlaub ganz nach deinen Wünschen. Überall im Reisebüro, auf tui.com und in der App.
Du willst im Herbst nicht auf deine Sommerdrinks verzichten und gleichzeitig etwas für ein starkes Immunsystem tun? Dann probiere jetzt unser Whey-Protein-Konzentrat aus 100% Biomilch mit 80% Eiweißgehalt. Cremig, gut löslich, ohne künstliche Zusätze. Erhältlich in verschiedenen Sorten wie Vanille oder Iced Latte und jetzt neu auch mit Matcha-Geschmack. Ein leckerer Drink mit hochwertigen Proteinen und ohne Zucker. Sichere dir jetzt schon 15% vor unserem Black-Sale-Start mit dem Code HEALTH15 auf edobilly.de. Viel Spaß bei deinem Podcast.
Hey, look, folks, Daniel Stern came up on this show at least once before, back when I talked to Macaulay Culkin. That was episode 883. How is Daniel Stern?
Always sweet. Again, what you have to remember is that I'm not really in a lot of scenes with those guys.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's almost my buddy brought it up the other day. He goes, it's closer to Castaway.
Yeah,
in a certain extent, where it's like, no, I do a lot of scenes by myself, talking to myself and all that.
Yeah,
I'm really just in I can probably count on definitely on one hand, but probably on like two or three fingers how many scenes I were. You know,
because they just shot that other side later.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is going on over here. That's going on over there, and then finally it all happens. You know, at the end. But even the crawling, you know, like across the rope or things like that, or like you know, the tarantula kind of like things. Like that's all. That's all like not in the same room. Also, because I can only work X amount of hours a day too.
So they had to figure out how to be economical about it.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you didn't get to really hang out with like Catherine O'Hara or Pesci or anything?
Not really. Because also I'm not working with them. Like, you know what I mean? Even though we're in the same movie, I'm not working with them.
It's so sad to know how the fucking sausage is made sometimes.
Right. Right. Exactly.
You can hear that episode for free in whatever podcast feed you're using. It's episode 883 with Macaulay Culkin. To get every episode of WTF ad-free and bonus episodes twice a week, go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Monkey and LaFonda, cat angels everywhere. Yeah.